You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Thursday, March 9th, 2017. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live. Steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Richard Collenberg, senior fellow at the Century Foundation, on America's needs for public school choice, not private vouchers. Also on the program today, Republicans desperately applying lipstick on their pig, while Breitbart and Bannon have a little fight. Also, CIA trying to assess the damage done from a potential leaker within the CIA. Trump administration fills beachhead positions throughout our government with, don't really know how to characterize the array of these people. And remember that whole thing about boots on the ground in Syria? Well, we have boots on the ground in Syria now.
At least several hundred,
yes, several hundred Marines with artillery headed to the Raqqa fight. And the EPA now sprinting to pollute our country. And Mark Cuban is actually out ahead of most Democrats when it comes to offering alternative health care proposals. And lastly, for the sake of Umar Shami on the web, on the IMs, violent video games do not impact empathy. And Matt is very excited. All this and more on today's program.
Matt's like, I could frankly care less either way.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would say this is probably the slowest news day that we've had in 3 or 4 months. And there's still a ton of stuff to talk about. But it doesn't feel chaotic. Has Donald Trump not been tweeting? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, he's been strangely silent, which is unsettling. That means definitely some things are going to happen pretty soon that are going to be really horrible.
It would be like going outside and it would take you a while to realize, like, there's no wind. Like, none. Like, the air is just not moving.
But it also shows, I mean, how relative it is because, you know, several hundred armed troops in Syria, the stories we'll get to about the EPA. Like,
right.
our barometer of what is a news
Indeed.
Day, yeah, we've become really desensitized.
Indeed. And this is a danger that I think, obviously, it's an acute one for people like us whose job it is to sort of, not sort of, to be sensitive to the news, make editorial decisions and let you know about it. But it's also really important, I think, that consumers of news try to both, on one hand, I mean, this is the classic psychological dilemma, right? I've got to set up defense mechanisms so I don't have a heart attack every day
right.
when I read the news. But I also don't want to become so desensitized that I'm not fully conscious of the fact that we're putting several hundred Marines into Syria. I mean,
Yes.
I mean, honestly, like, I look at sort of some of the aggregating sites that I look at, and it doesn't... Am I mistaken? Is this the first time we've put Marines in Syria? Or any military personnel?
Well, there have been... as far as I understand, this is definitely a escalation and the first time we've put Marines. But we've definitely had...
Special ops.
Advisors, special ops, intelligence people. And obviously, we've flown a lot of missions over there. But no, this is different because clearly they're gearing up to take the fight on the ground to ISIL. Like, that's why they're doing this. And they're either going to do it with Turkey, which has big logistical challenges, or maybe they'll do it with the Kurds. But this is definitely a new
thing.
Seems
like you'd want to work that out before you you get on the ground, but I don't know.
Well, I don't think they do have it worked out, because Turkey doesn't have a clear route there, and they want to throw the Kurds under the bus. Maybe they have an agreement with Russia. Who knows? Or maybe they're just there. It's not like these people make particularly coherent decisions.
The good news is it's only a couple of hundred. That's a quote, which I would place probably around 600 to 700.
You know that when we said, what does that mean together this morning, we both simultaneously were like, 600.
Right, three times as many. And there's artillery, which I would take to mean that there's at least artillery.
Right, and by the way, this was another point that you made about the debate about Trump, quote-unquote, sort of, you know, waking people up, which is that we are going to become, if this was happening under Obama or Hillary,
oh my God,
we would have Juan Cole on, we'd have a special, we'd be like, this is without a really dangerous thing. And I was like, oh, okay, just some reckless Middle East adventurism. Right. Sounds like traditional U.S. foreign policy to us.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm not convinced that people are just like, oh, okay, back to normal. Everything's fine. Last night, and I just want to give you a sense of what's going on with this Affordable Care Act, repeal and replace. For the life of me, I have not seen an analysis or been able to contemplate one which explains this, other than I think the Republican leadership was just like, we're gonna lose. One way or another, this is not going to be good, and this is the best way to go down. And last night, Paul Ryan was on with Tucker Carlson, who is vying to be perceived as less, is comparing his whiteness to Jorge Ramos. We will go we'll cover that later in the program. But I just want you to, if you're watching this, and if you're not, you could probably hear it in Paul Ryan's voice, and you'll also hear him pretend that this is too complicated for people to understand. Here is Tucker Carlson basically saying, hey, you're, and Mike Konzel has a great piece on this. The problem the Republicans have is they attacked the Affordable Care Act from the left, right? It didn't insure enough people. It was too expensive in terms of premiums. It was too expensive in out-of-pocket costs. And those three things, all critiques from the left. And maybe the critique was like, you're enriching insurance companies. All critiques from the left. The critiques from the right are, we don't believe the government should be in the business of ensuring that people have health care. And everything they're doing to insure it is causing it to be too expensive, and the market can take care of it. That's the argument from the right. But they made an argument from the left, and now they're rolling out a health plan that is like sort of from the right. They're trying to split the difference, and all they're getting, I think we said this before, is the worst parts for everybody about the Affordable Care Act, short of course, cutting taxes. Here is Paul Ryan trying to make that play. But look at the look on his face where he's like, man, what can you do?
Kind of a hard sell to say, yeah, we're going to repeal Obamacare, but we're going to send more money to the people who've already gotten the richest over the last 10 years. I mean, that's what this does, no? I'm not a leftist. It's just that's true.
I'm not that concerned about it because we said we were going to repeal all the Obamacare taxes. This is one of the Obamacare taxes. The other point I'd say is
it's dramatic. Do you remember Donald Trump getting up there when he was talking about how bad Obamacare was? That the first thing that he was talking about, we're going to repeal the Obamacare taxes for people making over $250,000 a year. And
he literally never said
capital
that.
Gains taxes. In fact, I think you could not find a single Republican who said that in a public forum short of like in the rotunda to some reporters from, you know, the Hill.
That's what this does, no? I'm not a leftist. It's just that's true.
I'm not that concerned about it because we said we were going to repeal all the Obamacare taxes. This is one of the Obamacare taxes. The other point I'd say is this dramatically helps us toward tax reform. I know it gets a little wonky, but by getting rid of the Obamacare.
Now, here he is saying, like, look, I want to skip that part about I don't want to sit here and brag about cutting taxes on the wealthiest people in the country. What I want to do is pretend that what I'm going to say is too complicated for people to understand because I don't really get it myself. But if I start talking about it and tell you that it's wonky, it's okay for people to tune out. I mean, this is actually a very old, I don't know if he's doing it consciously or not, but it's a dramatic technique. You can have a character do anything as long as the other people react to it in a way that the audience is. So when he says this is wonky, he doesn't have to explain it and he doesn't have to make any sense because other people are just going like, oh, I assume I don't get what he's talking about.
But by getting rid of the Obamacare taxes, the next bill up coming up this spring and summer is tax reform. And that means the new tax code that we're proposing, we put this in our Better Way plan too. It's a part of our blueprint. Go online and read that as well. That will not have to overcome those Obamacare taxes. Meaning, when we have a new replacement tax code to gut and replace this tax code, it won't have to also replace the Obamacare taxes. So, right. Getting
pause
rid
it,
of all these taxes.
So, the look on Tucker Carlson's face is like, what? How are you saying this? Because all Paul Ryan is saying is, we do these tax cuts now. And then, when we have tax cuts later, we won't be doing it all at the same time. That way, we won't be accused of having too many tax cuts because we're doing some now and we're doing some later.
So replace the Obamacare taxes. So right. By getting rid of all these taxes, we're lowering the revenue that is taken out of the American economy, out of families, out of businesses for the government. And we think that's really important.
Let me just rephrase what he just said. Not even rephrase. Let me repeat it. We're taking the revenue that is taken out of the economy and out of businesses for the American public. Let's play that again. Because for someone who would just preface, like, this gets wonky, what he just said is the way that someone who doesn't know what he's talking about would articulate it. Good.
The Obamacare taxes. So right. Getting rid of all these taxes, we're lowering the revenue that is taken out of the American economy, out of families, out of businesses for the government. And we think that's really important.
That's not revenue, what he's talking about. But you don't take revenue out of the economy. That's like...
gets a little wonky, Sam.
It's a little bit wonky.
It gets a little wonky in the sense that I'm just going to pontificate and blather and talk nonsense to justify giving rich people more money.
All right.
Tucker Carlson's face, that his thoughtful face, is always extremely confused frat boy.
Exactly.
Face.
Somewhat panicked.
Drives me
like.
Insane. Well, it's because he's stupid. So.
Meanwhile, I'll tell you what you can take out of something. You can take yourself from taking out of your house or your business to go on errands.
Very smooth transition.
Look, stamps.com. It saves you time. It saves you money. I can mail any letter, any package, just using my computer and a printer. Mailman picks it up.
Oh.
Create your stamps account in minutes online with no equipment to lease and no long-term commitments. They've got a great deal with the post office. The post office loves this too because they sell more stamps this way. Click, print, mail, and you're done. Stamps.com never closes. Unlike the post office, it's not outside of your house or outside of your office. You can print postage for letters and packages at your convenience 24/7. Well, I guess 24/7, 7 days a week. That's redundant, isn't it? No. Yes, 24/7
is seven days a week. Yeah.
Man.
I have a quibble.
This
with
is
the
a
copy.
Little bit wonky, but it is 24/7, 7 days a week. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. They'll send you a digital scale, automatically calculate your exact postage. Stamps.com will even help you decide the best class of mail based upon your needs. So, for instance, Michael, you'd always have low class. I had
what?
Dinner. I
what?
Was just hanging out there. I had to do that. Stamps.com, because right now, you can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, type in my code Majority Report. That's Stamps.com. Enter Majority Report. Stamps.com. You'll never have to leave your home and go to the post office again. All right, going to take a quick break. When we come back, Richard Kahlenberg.
Can I sit next to you? Can you sit next to me? Get the stars out your eyes. Come and bring them to me. I've been gone so long. I've been working on a plan, yeah. It's just that I've been down so long. I gotta give me my way. Can I sit next to you? Can you sit next to me? Oh. I walk out to Memphis alone, 'cause you do it for me. I know you would. All the kicks from the sticks, all the kicks are renewed. I put all that aside, concentrate on you. All the kicks from the sticks.
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the program senior fellow at the Century Foundation, Richard Kahlenberg, on his piece, America Needs Public School Choice, Not Private School Vouchers. Richard, welcome back to the program.
Oh, well, thanks for having me, Sam.
So, Betsy DeVos, our new Secretary of Education, has really made a career, and I think, you know, there's not a lack of quotes from her throughout the years that indicate that her agenda really is contrary to the idea of public schools. Like I think she has said explicitly, I believe in public education, but that doesn't mean I believe in public schools. That leads us to this moment, doesn't it?
Yeah, and for those of your listeners who followed the confirmation hearings of Betsy DeVos, that was very clear that she knew very, very little about public schools. She's single-minded in her focus on privatizing our system of education. So it's really really troubling to me.
To be fair, she also seemed to know very little about education as a field. I mean, because I think the other thing that we've seen consistently throughout the years is that when she talks about privatizing schools, one of the big agendas is to privatize it towards parochial schools, and I think from her perspective, some form of Christian schools. She sees education as a function of enhancing one's religion, I think. I mean, I think that's a fair statement, isn't it?
I think that's right. That's what the record shows, and in this country, anyone has the right to use their own money to send their kids to private school and religious school. That's in the Constitution. That's part of their freedom of religion. But what she's asking for now is something very, very different, which is using public funds to support private schools, 80% of which are religious in orientation in this country. And that's, I think, that's enormously problematic. You know, the public schools have served us well in trying to promote our democracy, democratic values, and the purpose of private religious school is to instill a love of God. It's a very different mission than the public schools.
Give me your sense, and I know this is slightly off topic, but it's I think it's relevant when in terms of the arguments that we hear. And I think, she's obviously not getting, going to give a press conference tomorrow saying like, look, my real agenda here, I want to be really explicit, is to fund, predominantly Christian education in this country through tax dollars. And so there's a mountain of rhetorical, I guess, rhetoric that, tries to promote the idea of school vouchers. I mean, just what do you make of the criticism that public schools are failing and cannot succeed?
Yeah, well, I mean, there are thousands and thousands of public schools that are succeeding quite well. I think where DeVos has an in with the American public is in suggesting that certain public schools are struggling, and there's evidence to suggest that some are. It tends to be high poverty, segregated schools that research suggests don't provide a good opportunity. But the question is, you know, what do you do with kids who are trapped in schools that aren't doing well? And, you know, we can try to improve those schools, obviously. But I think there's also another option, which is providing choice within the public school system. So, you know, public schools are much more accountable than private education. And so the idea would be, can we give kids who are stuck in schools that really aren't doing well an opportunity to go to a different public school where the performance is higher and where they're likely to be more economically and racially integrated and more diverse and therefore could do a really good job with students.
All right. So that's basically the argument your paper makes. And I want to go through it, but let me just also clarify. And this is, in many respects, a plan B, right? I mean, this is a plan that you propose when you're in a defensive posture, it seems to me, right? I mean, because no matter what, when we talk about the idea of school choice, it's going to require parents who have the social capital, the education themselves, the time and ability to take advantage of and to really sort of lean into the process in a way that there's a lot of heavy lifting. I mean, I just know that from being a public school parent myself, and knowing that I have access and resources that a lot of parents, just broadly speaking, don't have.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. That if you have kind of a system of public school choice that requires parents to opt in, that doesn't have any particular guidelines in place to ensure fairness, then you're not going to necessarily serve students well. There are places though, like Cambridge, Massachusetts, where they have universal choice. Everyone chooses. Low-income parents, more affluent parents, and there they've gotten some good results. So I guess I disagree in part. I think this isn't just a defensive posture, you know, response to vouchers, but also I think that if choice is really well implemented, that it can promote social mobility and social cohesion in this country. But these are the exception today. It's only in a small number of communities where they have universal choice so that everyone's involved in the choice process, not just those parents who have the extra access to, you know, social capital, and where there are fairness guidelines in place to ensure that the choice is going to promote the public good, as opposed to just serving the private interests of parents.
I don't want to get too much off on a tangent here, but because we have choice here in Brooklyn, and as far as I can tell, it still leads to a significant amount of segregation, and that one of the problems is that the schools themselves, they want to get kids who inevitably turn out to be the, you know, more affluent kids, because that's going to help their, because, you know, in education, the relationship between poverty and performance in school is about as close to one-to-one, I think, you know, as you can get. Yep. And so the schools want to get I don't know that they articulated themselves to themselves this way, but maybe they do. The more affluent kids, because that means that there's less pressure on them to deliver the test scores from which they're going to get rated right? Because the kids are going to come in and they're going to start at a baseline that is going to be guarantee their success on the other end of the thing.
That's right. That's the logic of just kind of completely unregulated choice, where it often leads to greater levels of segregation, precisely because of the reasons you cited, that the most affluent parents tend to have the most access to information. And then furthermore, schools have an incentive built into the system to want to attract kind of the kids who are most likely to perform well on tests. So unregulated choice is can lead to very, very negative results. But there are some models out there where choice can be used as an engine for school integration by race and by socioeconomic status, where they have weighted lotteries to make sure that everyone's going to benefit. Mm. I'm not saying that's what Betsy DeVos wants.
Right.
But there are some positive models out there. So I don't want to shut the door on school choice entirely.
And we should say, in those models you're talking about, you don't need added funds. In other words, like, you know, we even if we had the ability to impose those regulations on private schools, the fact is that it's, for some people, it may be paying tuition. For others, it's just a subsidy to pay a tuition that's five or six times that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so...
That's right.
All right, well, so let's talk about this idea of diverting scarce funds. Trump ran on a $20 billion a school voucher plan. Tell us about that and the implications of it.
Yeah, and there are a couple of different versions. So during the campaign, candidate Trump talked about using $20 billion in federal funds to allow states to promote choice in education, including for private schools. So a private school voucher plan. Now, he didn't say exactly how he would pay for it, but people fear that he's not likely to raise taxes on people in order to get this additional money, and so he's probably going to pull it from existing funds that are used to promote achievement for low income kids in public schools. So that would be hugely problematic. There's a lot of research to suggest that money well spent in public education can have a big impact on academic achievement. I mean, you don't need a million studies. Most parents know that already. And so this would divert funds from the public schools to the private schools. The latest iteration, now that he's President Trump, is a twist on this, where they may provide for a system where you would put up to $20 billion in tax credits for families to use private schools. So it's basically like a backdoor voucher program. It's just there's some political advantage to it. When it's a tax credit rather than a voucher, the public doesn't fully understand what's going on. And as a technical matter, kind of in the U.S. Senate, if this goes through the tax credit, then it's possible to do this with just 51 votes in the Senate. So that's why
is this a refundable or non-refundable tax credit?
I think they're talking about a refundable tax credit. So this would be, it would help some disadvantaged students. That's in order to make this at all plausible, they have to make sure that they're benefiting disadvantaged students. But it'll have the effect of really starving the public schools of the resources that they need.
So just to be clear for folks, what that would mean in practice is that and there's really no way, right, to know what the breakdown of people who would take the advantage of this is. So for instance, it could be 20% of people who are in schools that are failing, and it gives them the opportunity, and as it's a refundable tax credit, it would actually be a payment from the government to low-income people. But the other 80% could very well be people who are like, I was going to send my kid to this anyways, and now it's just cheaper for me. Right?
Right. So we don't, well, we don't know the details of what they're planning exactly, but that's one risk. And under a number of the state tax credit programs, they allow corporations to also pay into these programs, get a tax credit, and therefore, you know, reduce their taxes. So quite wealthy corporations can be part of this scheme as well.
And we just explain how it works. I mean, how it actually impacts the public schools, because I don't think people understand the implications of a school that loses, I don't know, 10, 20%, 30% of its federal funding, 50, 60% of its federal funding, what it does to that school.
Yeah. Well, the school systems, public school systems, will face some very, very difficult choices. So they could increase class sizes significantly as a way of trying to accommodate the fact that they are not going to have the same set of funds to educate students. They could cut after-school programs or music programs. There are a number of bad choices that schools will have to make if they have less revenue coming in.
And then just discuss the implications of our tax dollars going to a school system over which we have, I mean, you know, the irony is that the decisions are supposed to be from the local school boards, but in this instance, the decisions would be in the hands of one or two people who are running some type of either for-profit enterprise or are just, you know, I guess an official in a church.
Yeah, that's right. So the private schools ultimately are the ones given choice. I mean, it's talked about as choice for the parents, choice for the children, but a lot of private schools are going to have, you know, very particular ideas about which students they want to participate. In the report that I wrote recently, I cite the work of a colleague of mine, Kimberly Quick, who did some digging into a private school voucher program in North Carolina. And there was one school, the Fayetteville Christian School, that was quite explicit about who would be allowed in and who wouldn't. Now, this is a Christian school, so as one can imagine, you know, they are going to be advocating a certain religion. But at the same time, what they do in their admissions handbook is they're quite explicit about, we don't want Muslims, we don't want Jews, we don't want Hindus, we don't want either even, you know, certain brands of Christianity, like Mormonism, that where they say, we don't want these students. We don't want students whose parents are gay or lesbian, or who themselves are gay and lesbian. So, I mean, it's we lose all accountability when and civil rights protections when we go down this privatization route.
And just to be fair, it actually, I think it says non-messianic Jews.
Okay, right.
So the Jews for Jesus, those guys can get in.
Yes.
Right. But not the non-messianic ones. I mean, that's very Christian of them. It cuts against trying to desegregate students by race and socioeconomic status. But what about the massive evidence of success in terms of what private schools produce?
Yeah, that's what's really astounding here, is that Trump and DeVos have gotten behind an idea that the most recent research suggests would be disastrous educationally for kids. So for a number of years, there were studies of private school voucher programs in Milwaukee and Cleveland and other places, and the results were pretty much mixed. I mean, there were they weren't terrible. They certainly didn't improve academic achievement. But in the last couple of years, as these voucher programs have grown, the latest research is really devastating. So you see not just that the students in voucher programs are doing no better, they're doing much, much worse. So there was a study of the Louisiana voucher program, which saw substantial drops in student achievement. The same is true in places like Ohio and Indiana. So this, you know, if we're worried about competing with other countries, this is one of the last things we would want to do is invest in unaccountable private schools that are actually reducing the achievement of students.
And I mean, this is, it doesn't take much. I don't want to be flip about it, but it doesn't take much effort, it seems to me, to understand why that's the case, right? Because most of these schools are parochial schools, and their value system is such that teaching kids what we, and by we, I mean you and I, and perhaps most of the people listening to this, perceive as educational values are actually lower on the list of priorities.
Right. Yeah. That's, and I think particularly today when our democracy is under so much stress, you know, with a president attacking the freedom of the press, freedom of religion, you know, these things that had strong bipartisan support in the past. Now that our democracy's in stress, this would be exactly the wrong moment to divert money to private schools who do not have as their mission the promotion of democratic values. There was a recent study that looked at how young people view democracy, and there was a disturbing uptick in the number of young people who say democracy is either a bad or very bad system, a bad way of running a society. It's now up to about a quarter who are saying this. So, public schools have not always done the best job. They could do a better job of promoting democratic values, but it would be really risky to start diverting money to private schools that have no specific mission of promoting these democratic values and belief in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights.
Yeah, and probably, not as, I guess, an intense dedication to things like reading and math.
Right.
And science in particular. All right, so let me ask you this. So the who do you hope reads this? Because we were just talking before you came on. We were just briefly touching on this this concept of the Republican rollout of their repeal and replace, and that they have a problem in that they attacked the Affordable Care Act from the left, when in fact they have no interest in doing 90% of what they said they wanted to do to fix the Affordable Care Act. I mean, fundamentally, their perspective is they want to not have the government in the business of ensuring that people are covered with health insurance or to get access to health insurance. I mean, Betsy DeVos, I think, has been, like I say, fairly explicit, far more explicit than one would ever imagine could get her to be confirmed to be Secretary of Education,
right,
about what her agenda is. This argument that you're making seems to me to be reasonable, but it is founded on an assumption that we all have the same agenda in providing the best education for as many children as possible. And by best education, we define that as in, understanding and being able to work with science and math and having good literacy skills and the love of learning and perhaps math and art and whatnot. And I don't think that set of assumptions is shared with a vast majority, not majority, but a vast number of people in this country. So who is this? Who do you hope reads this and in some way slows Betsy DeVos's role?
Well, I think there was some evidence in the confirmation battle over Betsy DeVos that at least there are some moderate or Republicans who are supportive, still supportive of public education. I mean, there are, and you know, there are conservative reasons to be supportive of public education as well. If we want, you know, if we don't want to do something risky that will reduce academic achievement and further endanger our democracy. So, you know, even in places like Utah, when the private school voucher issue came up, you know, voters defeated the effort. So very, very conservative places, you've seen support for public education. So I've got some hope that there continues to be a strong group of folks, some of whom may have voted for Donald Trump, who nevertheless believe in public schools. You know, 90% of American students still attend public schools. And so there's a vast constituency for improving those schools rather than giving up on them. So I've got some hope that there will be moderates or even conservatives who voted for Trump who nevertheless will support the idea that we need to strengthen our public education system that serves the vast majority of students in this country.
If people want to dig a little deeper and find out those the structures of those school choice programs that you you mentioned, Cambridge, Mass, other places around the country, the good. Where would best place for people to start?
Yeah, well, our report has a lot of links to research on different places that are promoting school choice in the right way, you know, through public schools and in order to promote equity rather than further separation. So our website at the Century Foundation is tcf.org, and on there you can find this new report called America Needs Public School Choice, Not Private School Vouchers, and lots of other reports that my colleagues and I have written over the years that talk about the importance of public education and the need to strengthen it rather than abandon it.
All right, and we'll put a link to that at majority.fm. Thanks so much for your time today. Richard Kahlenberg, Senior Fellow at the Century Foundation.
Very good. Thank you for having me, Sam. Appreciate it.
All right, folks, going to head into the fun half of the program, wherein we will have some fun. We're going to play some video clips. Maybe. We got really slammed on Twitter yesterday for not having any Gorka on
yes,
the show.
There was a lot of upset about that, so we'll correct that.
We are going to
move on the second half very heavily.
We don't have Gorka today.
We have no Gorka. But we have a new favorite guy in the...
Oh my God, this is the best thing ever. Best thing ever.
Representative Jason Smith from Missouri.
Every time I try to not do a certain impression, they pull me back in.
He's something else, this guy. You know, I'm always, one of the things I enjoy more than anything else, I mean, it also drives me crazy, is to find the intersection of someone so dumb, but simultaneously so convinced.
So arrogant.
The assessment of themselves is through the moon.
He definitely did one of those. Why doesn't everybody just sit back and learn?
Exactly.
All right, now I'm about to say something really truly mind-expandingly stupid.
Folks, it's your membership that makes this show possible. You can become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. That's jointhemajorityreport.com. If you want to support the show in other ways, beyond telling your friends about the program or giving us a review on iTunes, which helps, you can buy all your crap through our Amazon or Jet.com links by going to majorityreportkickback.com. I should say, if you buy your crap from Amazon, then buy it through our link. It's the least you can do. You can skim off of Jeff Bezos's profits. Head over to Jet.com, too. They have that still, I think, that 15% off the first three purchases. But you go to majorityreportkickback.com, either click on Jet or click on Amazon, whichever one you use. You should try Jet out, too. And bookmark it. Always go through there. We get a kickback. And of course, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off your coffee. Great outfit in Wisconsin. Quick break. We'll be back. 646-257-3920. Tomorrow, I believe. Sometimes he disappears on me a little bit. Stephen Elliott. Long time listeners will know who Stephen Elliott is. The Rumpus. He wrote that movie with that guy who looks with Franco, that James Franco was in. Very interesting, funny guy. Sort of like a McSweeney's-ish guy. I think he probably.
Oh, I like that. That sounds good. Yeah, whatever Stephen happened? Wasn't there a guy who used to write for McSweeney's who did basically like his blog was just a giant Andrew Sullivan impression? Do you know what I'm talking about? I think his name was like Neil Pollock or something. He was funny.
Oh, Neil Pollock.
I think that was his. I don't think that was his real.
No, Neil Pollock is a guy from. I think maybe he was a McSweeney's, but he was around before that.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I'll look it up.
All right, folks.
Are they still around? McSweeney's?
I haven't heard much about them lately. Like for like the past 5 years. I don't know. Maybe. Oh, they are.
We're going to go into the fun half. We're going to move on it very heavily.
We'll be right back after this.